Welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. My name is Henrik Palmgren and we are recording from the west coast of Sweden. We have a new show available every Sunday and Thursday at redicecreations.com. I hope you visit us often as our news is updated on a daily basis. Today we are going to dive into Stanley Kubrick's movie Eyes Wide Shut together with researcher Kent Daniel Bentkowski. So stay tuned for that good stuff coming right up. Last week we had Mitch Batras with us talking about the Sun-Earth connection and also about the Maya. So a big thanks to Mitch for that. If you missed any of our previous shows, just access our archive and we got all of our shows there available for you. Now let's dive into Kubrick and his Eyes Wide Shut. Today we are joined by Kent Daniel Bentkowski. He has been studying occult symbolism of the global elite for about 27 years. He's been on Greg Szymanski's investigative journal radio show. He has also been on The Freeman Perspective, Freeman, a good friend who's been on this show about three times. And Kent has articles published on Rens.com, and he also, of course, got his own website, which is kentroversypapers.net. And if you want to follow along during our talk here today, just go over to kentroversypapers.net. So let's say hello to our guest and say welcome to the show, Kent, and thank you for spending some time with us here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me today. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to speak to a new audience.
Excellent, excellent. It's great to have you here. And to begin and kick things off, you know, how did you get the name Kentroversy?
Well, that has an interesting history to it. My best friend Robert and myself have oftentimes political-based conversations which are of a controversial nature. And one day we were talking about the usual politics, and he had said to me, "Oh, you're just trying to start a controversy." And I said, "Bob, could you repeat that, please?" And he says, "Yes, you're trying to start a controversy." And he said it with a smile on his face, and I immediately recognized that that was the most perfect way to describe me as a journalist and also the subjects that I cover in my investigative reporting.
Mm. Very interesting. And, you know, your website, of course, is kentroversypapers.net. So what are the Kentroversy Papers?
Well, the Kentroversy Papers are a series of observations on my part. I do something that I refer to research journalism. Typically, a journalist reports the daily news, things that are going to happen tomorrow, perhaps things that happened today, mm-hmm. and things that happened yesterday. I like to pick subject matters that are timely and timeless in their nature, and in terms of what we're going to talk about today, this movie, Eyes Wide Shut, when I sat down and actually watched it with a series of my friends and family on a movie night a couple years ago, they were devastated by what they were looking at in the movie, and they didn't understand it. So what I wanted to do is explain in the report that I had written, Eyes Wide Shut, Occult Symbolism, what that movie was all about and what specifically the symbolism was trying to tell the viewers.
Yeah, you know, and of course I myself published this this link to your site, Kent, a while back, and so I suspect many of my listeners who follow the website and this radio show are familiar with the article at this point. But it's going to be very interesting to dive into this. But before we do that, what has been your most widely read report? Do you know that?
Yeah, I watch on a daily basis the hits that come into my website and specifically what they are looking at when they visit my website. much what I discovered was far and away the most popular report that I have written on that website of the approximately 400 controversy papers that I've published on controversypapers.net is this Eyes Wide Shut report.
Mm-hmm.
This took me by surprise because it was not a very high priority for me to write about this. It was in an effort to explain to some of my close family members and friends what this movie was all about.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand when I first put this report online on March 19th, 2006, what type of impact it would have on my readers. I get between 25 and 100 hits per day, and it varies from day to day, just on this one report.
Interesting. Yeah, so it's very timely to dive into this, I'd say. But do you have any other reports on the symbolism found in Hollywood films?
Well, what I'm planning on doing, based on the popularity of the Eyes Wide Shut report, is I'm going to be, in the future, talking about the movie They Live by John Carpenter, and that will specifically touch on political allegory and commentary. Stanley Kubrick's 1968 film, which is a masterpiece, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and that's going to talk about the esoteric symbolism in that film, and I am also going to be dealing with The Exorcist, Clerks and Clerks 2, which are going to talk about the underbelly of American economy, and George Romero's Living Dead quartet of films.
Excellent. So you got a lot of good things up ahead for people who are interested in this. So we should follow along with controversypapers.net, I guess. And, you know, to kind of dive into all of this then from the top, we're talking about Eyes Wide Shut, of course. And where do you want to begin, Kent? Do you want to talk about the movie or about, you know, about Kubrick or about some of the, you know, analyzed the movie in any way? Basically, the floor is yours here. Where do you want to go with this?
Well, I'd like to begin by saying that most people who see this movie do not understand what they're looking at, and there's a reason for it. The Illuminati deal with symbolism that is hidden to the larger population, and they frequently talk about those who have eyes to see and ears to hear. And what that means is that the inside initiates are able to decode this symbolism and understand what they're looking at. So I applied my 27 years of research on this group of people and applied it to the film. And one thing I'd like to begin with is that Stanley Kubrick himself was a high-level mystery school initiate. So that explains how that symbolism got into that movie in the first place.
Interesting, and of course this, you know, posts a number of questions. Obviously, I guess here is, do you think that Kubrick was, you know, trying to reveal some of these secrets, or is there some other reason why, you know, constantly we are being, you know, confronted with this kind of symbolism, as you say?
My personal belief is that he was trying to reveal some of this symbolism to the larger population. And just like we saw with Mozart and his magic flute, which revealed inside secrets of the Freemasonic movement, Stanley Kubrick also had this revelation in his film Eyes Wide Shut, which basically saw him quickly die under mysterious circumstances, which occurred only 4 days after he in the final print of a film to Warner Brothers.
Hmm. Well, and what was it? Was it a heart attack? Do we know that, what it was?
It was stated publicly as a heart attack.
Mm.
However, I've done research into this, and his wife was completely surprised by his death. He was not under any strain in terms of heart disease, and it was a shock to his family, friends, and professional coworkers.
Yeah. Was it, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but was it you who wrote a paper on, that was called How the Elite Creates Heart Attacks?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
that article was entitled How the Globalists Create Heart Attacks.
Ah, okay, yeah. Hm.
And that was published August 16th, 2005.
Hm.
My point at that time was, there had been over 100 microbiologists over the past several years who had died under very unusual circumstances, and they all were known as heart attacks to the public, in the public news media. And basically what I did is I went and I interviewed someone who worked in a heart telemetry unit, and I interviewed this nurse and asked her how could they create a heart attack, what type of chemicals would they use, what type of drugs would they use that would leave no sort of a trace afterwards.
Hmm. Interesting. And do you think that he was, you know, taken out, so to speak?
Yes, I do.
Mm.
And the reason that I do think that this occurred was that there is some very unusual math that went along with his murder. And basically at that point, one second.
Mm, sure.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, no problem.
his date of death was March 7th, 1999. He turned in the final print of Eyes Wide Shut 4 days earlier on March 3rd, 1999. Now, if you go from the date he died, which was March 7th, 1999, and we go forward to the first day of the most famous film this man ever made, 2001, A Space Odyssey,
mm-hmm.
we come up with the date, January 1st, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
The number of days between March 7th, 1999, and January 1st, 2001, or exactly 666 days.
Oops. Okay.
Now that is a coincidence that I'm not entirely sure is entirely coincidental.
Yeah, exactly.
whenever you see these built-in numerology codes into specific events, for instance, all the incidents of the number 11,
yeah.
The September 11th attacks,
yeah.
It becomes less and less of a coincidence, each one of these that you dig up.
I always used to, as soon as I get into these kinds of topics with my guests, I always like to, you know, ask the question if you know, this might, if all of this always is, you know, from the part of those who might be orchestrating the events, or if this might actually be something, I guess, that could be related to what I like to call, you know, the overmind, I guess, who kind of works in this way, it seems, to kind of expose us to these kinds of patterns to let us know about that there is something more behind the event. Do you have an idea about this at all?
Well, actually, my almost three decades of research in this have shown that there is a specific built-in code that these people are fanatical about incorporating into their most prized events.
Mm.
And, like, for instance, in this death of Stanley Kubrick, you know, for this to be exactly 666 days, a number that is very important to the Illuminati, for the reason that it refers to a triplicity of the number six, which in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life refers to the sun or solar energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when you see these types of things built into these events, these codes, and I've seen many, many of these over the years, I am convinced that this is a part of their obsession, that they must do this to create more energy for themselves, to make themselves more powerful, to be guided by the numerology behind the event. And if we look at other events like September 11, like I mentioned a moment ago,
yeah,
you see this coding throughout the whole event.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Very interesting, you know, and I totally agree. And also getting back to the movie here, there are obviously many levels in these movies, but what would you say would be the kind of the main hints in this movie if we are to dive into that?
Okay, in the Eyes Wide Shut movie, at the beginning of the movie, we see Nicole Kidman doing a striptease in front of a mirror, which is a closet door. The mirror is a symbol of the human soul, and it's also a reflection of the as above, so below concept. In addition to that, it is also a symbol of the macrocosm being reflected into the microcosm. And in this section of the film, we see in the corner of the room under a lamp a pair of tennis rackets. Now this refers to the fact that this movie is about love and love issues and fidelity and infidelity and cheating and sexual deviance and the whole nine yards related to this. A little later on in the film, we once again see Nicole Kidman in front of a mirror, and just to the right in the film frame of the mirror is a painting of sunflowers.
Yeah.
Now this again refers to the solar energy that these individuals are trying to harness and to use that energy to make them more powerful. So those are just a couple of the beginning symbols that we see in the film. Beyond that, there is also allusion to the Through the Looking Glass and the Alice in Wonderland mythos.
Yeah.
The Nicole Kidman character is named Alice in the movie. And so therefore, on another level, her standing in front of this mirror is Alice as seen through the eye of the looking glass.
Yeah. Interesting, you know. Of course, we have Alice in Wonderland. And also, I guess, throughout the movie, there is very interesting use of colors in different ways, and of course again we could dive into the area, I guess, of the rainbow. This is something that occurs several times throughout the movie. Do you want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah. the use of color in this film is used to basically put forth several different bits of information. For example, in the ritual section of the film,
mm-hmm.
which is the very part of the film that was never mentioned in any of the advertising, was never mentioned in any of the promotional materials, it was never mentioned in the DVD packaging or anything else. The high priest in that ritual wears the color red.
Yeah.
And this individual, who is known in the script as Red Cloak, is a color allusion to the bloodline aspect of the Illuminati.
Mm.
Beyond that, we also see, as you mentioned a moment ago, the rainbow.
Yeah.
And in the, for instance, in the section of the movie where Tom Cruise goes to rent a costume to get into the ritual,
mm-hmm.
this is known as the Rainbow Fashions. And interestingly, underneath on the first floor of this store is a second store that's called Under the Rainbow. The Rainbow Bridge is known as a way of traveling from the human three-dimensional world that we inhabit and the spirit world, and this is the reason for that.
Very interesting, and again we have this tie into other previous films and stories. You mentioned, of course, earlier Alice in Wonderland, but here again we have the Wizard of Oz theme occurring. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. The Wizard of Oz is a film that I have always been frightened of since I was a very young child. And I never understood why. And my family members, my mom and my dad and my grandparents and other adults, could never tell me why I was so afraid of this movie.
Mm.
I later did some research on mind control, and I found that The Wizard of Oz is a very big time theme in these mind control situations. MK Ultra program is one of the most well known of these mind control programs.
Yeah.
And so, like, for instance, in The Wizard of Oz, we see that they are mentioned, mind control slaves are programmed under the Wizard of Oz system, are always told to follow the Yellow Brick Road. The Yellow Brick Road is associated with compliance, travel, and a goal to be achieved.
Mm.
It's also adapted to fit the differing circumstances of the individual. For instance, if a person was interested in sports, they might adapt this to be like a running race against another character. Another thing that happens with The Wizard of Oz is that we see this part of the movie in black and white, and then it goes into this color section of
yeah.
the movie once
yeah.
they get to Oz. This is a symbol of the eyes to see and the ears to hear again. Because what happens is you see the mundane shown in black and white, dull colors, which represent something undesirable to the subconscious mind of a child. Like, for instance, who would want to be part of something dull and boring?
Yeah.
Reality is downplayed in this way, and make-believe is encouraged, especially with the part of the movie that turns into color, or this is suddenly a place of adventure, and the yellow brick road itself is not too subtle of a reference to gold, wealth, and success that the Illuminati are well known for.
Yeah. So, do you think that in that movie, again, there is someone trying to tell us something? Because, in one instance, that movie also, I guess, reveals the fact of the, you know, the evil wizard who basically does not have any magical power. It's just, you know, he's behind the curtain and it's all fake, basically.
Yeah, and that actually is true of what we see in our world today. People like George W. Bush claim to have all this power when in fact he's only a puppet of people who are over him directing his actions and movements on a day-to-day basis. One other thing about the Wizard of Oz that I thought was very interesting was that the three companions of Dorothy, the Scarecrow, which relates to the brain, the man, Tin Man, which relates to the heart, and the Cowardly Lion, which relates to courage, represent the mental, emotional, and physical bodies that H.P. Blavatsky wrote about in her theosophical poem entitled There Is a Road.
Oh, really?
And we are alluded to the Yellow Brick Road once again.
Interesting.
This poem goes in part, there is no danger that dauntless courage cannot conquer, and that refers to the lion. There is no trial that spotless purity cannot pass through, that relates to the Tin Man. There is no difficulty that strong intellect cannot surmount, and that relates to the Scarecrow. So there is layer upon layer upon layer of symbolism in this film specifically, and many others just like it.
Interesting. And again, I mean, it's very, I think, must have been a very powerful experience to go and see this movie back in, you know, I mean, 1939, I think it was released, right?
Yes,
yeah.
That's correct.
Amazing. Another thing regarding the rainbow, I think, isn't there something in the beginning when the main character in Eyes Wide Shut is at the party? Let me see here.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
There, at the beginning of the movie, there is a Christmas party.
Yeah.
And there is a two models that walk up to Tom Cruise's character, who is Dr. Bill Harford. Dr. Bill being a pun, which should be self-evident. These models ask him, don't you want to go to where the rainbow ends? And he replies that all depends on where that is. And once again, we have the allusion to the rainbow, which is, on one level, a representative of druidic magic and the type of magic that these individuals in the Illuminati practice.
Is this also related to sex magic and this kind of stuff?
Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
This movie has the whole section of the film where it talks about the ritual and shows the ritual as he's walking through the mansion. Which is interesting because Tom Cruise's character has to go through seven gates to get inside this ritual. He sees the first person that he runs into is at the front gate. Then he is taken to the house itself. He sees a second group of men who are asking him for a password, which that password is Fidelio.
Yeah.
That's the name of Beethoven's only opera, and is also a story of a woman who rescues her husband from death in a political prison. And as the ritual section of the movie progresses, we see that this is exactly the same circumstance that Dr. Harford finds himself in the midst of. He is immediately known to be an imposter, and how they would know this is by recognizing the mask that the individual wears. So he would walk in wearing a mask or a costume that is unrecognizable to the others, and they would immediately call him on that, as they do in the film, and he is asked to kindly remove his mask by this red-cloaked high priest, and at that point, we are in the midst of this Fidelio story, where this individual, this woman, makes a very bold stand to try to save Dr. Harford's life. And as we get to the end of the film, we find out that this very same individual ends up dying of an overdose.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, there's of course, obviously, a lot of interesting stuff in the ritual part of the movie. I guess one of the more blatant, themes in this scene here, of course, for those who might be doubtful, is obviously the chair that this red cloaked figure sits in, right? It's I don't know if you're okay, if you're not remember this, behind him on the chair, it is you got the two-headed eagle with a crown on top. I don't know if you noticed that.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
There's some obvious things here also. I mean, for it's on these both levels. It's both on a subliminal level and it's in your face stuff also.
Yeah, this symbol, this two-headed, which is shown to be an eagle, but which is actually a phoenix, is representative of the power of this group, which stretches from the far east to the far west. And it also secondarily refers to the fact that there is a public exoteric and a private esoteric meaning to things that they present and talk about. And, you know, you see this type of thing in the United States seal. The Great Seal of the U.S. is on the back of the dollar bill. And other symbols associated with this are the uncapped pyramid, and what the pyramid has to do with the United States, no one has ever come out and explained, other than the fact that this Illuminati group apparently goes back to the Egyptian and Babylon mystery schools, which is a time before Jesus Christ.
You know, one other thing that you also bring up in your article, which is very interesting, is the place, the location where they did this movie, this town in England. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the town in England that they had done this movie in has in the courtyard of a section of town which has several shopping stores, has this a couple of the figures from the movie with these Victorian masks that they're wearing. And I show the photographs of that Alice C. Taylor, another researcher from England, who he had taken those photos. And the interesting thing is that the biggest landowner in that town in which this film was shot are the Rothschild family.
Amazing. And,
but that's just the coincidence.
Yeah, sure.
No, just the coincidence.
Do you know where the for the ritual scene itself, they're in obviously in some kind of a huge mansion or palace or something. Do you know where that is?
Yes, I do, but it escapes me at the moment.
Okay, okay. Yeah, sure. We can return to that because I remember I just very recently published on my site redicecreations.com an article regarding something called the Mother of Darkness Castle in Belgium, and when seeing the movie again and watching the outside of this huge castle or mansion, it's some eerie, very eerie, you know, similarities between these two, and it's obviously very interesting. But it's not something that is found in Milton Keynes, this town in Buckinghamshire.
Right, right.
So, if we were to, you know, kind of continue here, the use of masks obviously is very interesting, and I don't know if you made this connection, but there is I think it's a carnival in Venice that I think began using these kinds of masks. I can't the name escapes me also of the name of this carnival, but do you know why they have these kinds of masks in the movie? These are very scary masks, by the way.
Yeah, this type of imagery is designed to symbolize the occult powers of this group, and also some of the different things that we see, or different people that we see wearing these masks. This is representative of this Venetian carnival, which in the Middle Ages is apparently when all this began, and this was designed to pretty much freak out the general public.
Interesting. And you know, we have this this scene, I guess, that takes things to a whole new level, because after viewing the film several times, you can notice that it's several layers to it. And in one scene, Alice lies in bed with the masks besides her, and I think this is relating to, you know, if this only was a dream, or if it really did happen. Do you want to dive into that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. The interesting thing about this is, at one point during this film, they begin showing these visions or dream visions, lucid dreams of the Nicole Kidman character, Alice Hartford, who wakes up at one point to find her husband's very same mask that he wore in this ritual on the pillow next to her in bed. And it's on his pillow, by the by. So this begs the question as to whether or not Alice was at this masked ball, which itself is a pun as well, or was it her just finding the mask a discovery of her husband's secret life, secret sex life? And beyond this, there's also the matter of this dream that she describes, where she is forced to make love to a nearly endless line of men whom she did not know and she did not recognize, And during this part of the film where she's describing this, and when they're showing this on the screen, she makes love to this military figure that it pretty much begs the question at that point is, you know, this real? Is this a manifestation of her dreams into reality? Or is this just more of the original story, which in 1926 by Arthur Schnitzler was originally a book called Dream Story.
And you also make this very interesting connection with tying this together with MK Ultra and of course Kathy O'Brien, who speaks about this. Again, is this, you think, a hint, you know, that Alice, the main character here, is under mind control and just as you say, are, you know, forced to be intimate with, you know, many different men at the top level, or even at this ritual that Dr. Bill Hartford was attending himself?
Yes, that's right. Kathy O'Brien, who is an MK Ultra survivor herself, she describes herself as a presidential model mind control slave, which means that she was allowed access to the highest levels of senators and congressmen and even people in the White House. And she wrote this book in 1995, which is entitled Transformation of America. And in this book, one of the recurring themes that she describes was put into her head and her mind and her subconscious constantly, was this idea of there is nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. This is done to make the individual feel that they are powerless, that they have no possibility of escaping this situation. And Ms. O'Brien, in her book, describes, you know, all the multitude of problems that she went through to rescue herself and her daughter, Kelly.
Yeah.
From this group, and the damage it had done to her daughter, who is now very severely disabled because of what was done to her.
Yeah, this is awful and very, at the same time, very, very interesting to hear a story. So a lecture with Kathy O'Brien a while back, and it's very interesting to hear about this, and especially about the kind of mind control that is performed, and also the compartmentalization of their personality, basically, where I guess we could have this kind of situation where a person is like two persons within one, and the only way, I guess, that awareness of the other, you know, kind of will go back and forth is through a kind of a dream state, I guess, or it would feel like a dream state, I guess, if the person are beginning to be aware of the, you know, that they actually have another personality within themselves, a schizophrenia, basically.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, and I did not write about this in this particular article because it kind of got out off into a tangent, was the fact that in my lifetime, I've known two people who have had multiple personality disorder, both of which were women and both of which were sexual molestation victims. And this one woman who lived next door to me in the early 90s, she had 16 different personalities. I knew her as Linda, okay? And I would come up to her and see her and wave to her, "Hey, Linda, how you doing today?" And she'd give me a dirty look and, you know, "I don't know who you're talking about here. My name is Francine."
Yeah.
or something like that.
Hmm.
And so I, after seeing this happen a number of times with this individual, I, when I got her in a Linda state of mind, I had asked her if she would expound upon her personal experiences and why she was having this disconnect with reality. And the trauma associated with this sexual abuse is so intense. And in her case, her father began sexually molesting her at age 6 months. And this had created such a fractured state of mind in this woman that, as I said, she had 16 different personalities.
Amazing. Yeah, there's a lot of information about this out there, which is very interesting. And again, it seems to always be involved in as you say, this ritualistic, sexual theme going on again, which also obviously makes the movie very interesting in this, you know, really strange kind of orgy scene that is going on there in the movie. And one thing that just came to mind here as we spoke was, I don't know if you've heard about the OTO, the Order Templi Orientis, the secret society. And allegedly, I've heard that they sometimes refer to themselves as Oz. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I have.
So,
I am very familiar with the OTO.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of research on that group. I have read a lot of Aleister Crowley's writings.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I have heard of them referring to themselves as Oz.
Oz, yeah. So this, as we spoke of earlier, of course, the Wizards of Oz might be a kind of a pun for, I guess, the magicians or something of the OTO, basically.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, the OTO practice something called sex magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And what that is the launching of sexual-based orgasms, which are used to launch either spells or talismans.
Hmm.
And they use the energy of the sexual orgasm to launch these operations, as they refer to them.
Hmm.
And they feel that they get a lot of power out of this because of the human association with, you know, the good feelings of making love to someone.
We kind of jump around here, I guess, a bit, but that's okay. That's the way things go here. But I would like to return to a little bit about the character who plays the music during this scene, and the music in itself in the ritual scene is very powerful, very, very interesting. But this guy's name is Nick Nightingale, an interesting name. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, the particular music that we hear during this ritual scene is a song by Jocelyn Pook, P-O-O-K,
mm-hmm.
who had recorded this backwards Romanian priest speaking a mass in Latin, and had reversed this with all these violins and all these spoken and chanted vocals throughout this section. And it's very off-putting to hear, and it creates a very dramatic and a very sinister type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
Now, the character of Nick Nightingale, he is playing a jazz club in the film, and Tom Cruise's character just happens to walk into this place and hooks up with his old friend, we find, from medical school. Only Mr. Nightingale says, "I am no longer a doctor. I now play jazz, and I perform at these rituals, of which I am blindfolded, and they only tell me a little bit in advance where it's going to be, and that's because the ritual sites change from event to event. And the Nightingale is an interesting occult association as well, because it symbolizes the connection between life and death, which is what this film turns into after Dr. Harford's entry into this sex magic ritual. Harford falls under great danger, as he was discovered only moments after he gains entrance. He's an imposter. He does not belong there. Additionally, the song of the Nightingale was also thought to announce the death, or was the cry of help of a soul who is trapped in purgatory. So this character of Nick Nightingale is a foreshadowing of things that are going to be soon happening in this movie. I, of course, realized what I was looking at when I saw this. After my movie night was over, and my friends and family who were watching the movie with me that night, none of them knew a thing of what they had just seen. And so I gave a little talk afterwards and pointed out some of this symbolism.
Yeah.
And it made much more sense to them once they understood why there was a character called Nightingale, why there had to be a sex ritual, why the person who was the high priest at this ritual was dressed in red, why the rainbow was used, and so on and so forth.
Very interesting, and to round things off in this segment, to let people know, you know, the kind of detail that goes into a production like this, why don't you tell us, because I think you wrote about that, how many years basically that Kubrick was working on this film, and also, of course, I think there was some kind of record involved in, you know, Tom Cruise walking through a doorway or something, right?
Yeah, that's correct. The film took 3 years to finish, from pre-production to post-production. And in that 3 years, it included a 46-week continuous shoot. This is in the Guinness Book of World Records as being the longest movie shoot in the history of Hollywood. Additionally, as you just pointed out, there is a second entry in the 2000 Guinness Book of World Records, which talks about Tom Cruise walking through this one doorway 90 times. So this kind of refers to the work ethic of Stanley Kubrick and how much of a stickler he was for details.
Yeah.
And just one thing that I would like to mention,
sure,
that does occur at the end of the film is there's a section where Dr. Harford has this revelatory scene between himself and this Ziegler character, who was the person hosting the Christmas party at the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
Tom Cruise's character has his hand stuck on the side of his jaw in the most unnatural position that you would ever see. And I've never seen anything like it in any other film I've ever watched.
Yeah.
And here I find out, after picking up a book called Codex Magica by a man named Tex Mars.
Tex Mars, sure, yeah.
A reverend.
Yeah.
He points out that a number of dictionaries of symbolism state that the hand placed on the neck signifies sacrifice. Now, sacrifice can have at least two meanings. It can be the continuing threat. threat of the penalties to be applied to those in order to punish those adepts and initiates who impertinently reveal the secrets of the order.
Mm.
And secondly, it can be the willingness of the individual performing the sign to sacrifice himself for the good of the order, for the good of the cause, or for the great work of the Illuminati.
Hmm.
And so that explained specifically why this particular posture was so important to put into this scene.
Hmm.
As we find out, Ziegler was at the ritual, and this secondary scene at the almost the very end of the movie is exactly 13 minutes long.
Mm. Interesting.
So we have some unusual symbolism in the length of the scene itself.
Yeah.
With the number 13.
Yeah, and I think there are no coincidences or no details that are escaping film. Done by you know, Stanley Kubrick at this point. So everything, as you say, every small detail has been planned for very, you know, very meticulously in ahead of time, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, Kent, we are sorry to interrupt here, but we are actually totally out of time in this segment. But to again finish things off in a minute or so here, tell people again about your website and how they can find you and more of your writing.
Sure, thank you. My website again is the Kentroversy Papers, and you can find it at kentroversypapers.net, and Kentroversy is spelled Kentroversy, papers.net. Some of the other writings that I do relate to finance, today's politics, and the political situation of the world. I also write about symbolism in rock music bands.
Mm-hmm.
I've written about how the globalists create heart attacks. I've written about the education system. And specifically, if your listeners would like to find this Eyes Wide Shut report, what they can do is they can go to the Kentroversy Papers front page, and in the right-hand column of the page itself is a section called Kentroversy Special Reports. They look for the entry Eyes Wide Shut Occult Symbolism, which was published on March 19th, 2006, and has a most popular next to it. So that's how they can find that report.
Excellent. And I will also, of course, link up that article in relation to this program. So again, we'll continue in the subscriber section, Kent. But for this segment, thank you very much for coming on. And we'll take a short break and we'll be right back. Kent and I will shift gears now and continue talking about the recent episode of 24 showing nukes going off in the US. We're going to talk about the conditioning going on with these TV programs like 24 and also Jericho. We'll also dive into talking about 9/11, 2012, Internet 2, the goals of the global elite, and a whole lot more. So I hope you join us in the subscriber section for much more interesting stuff. If you're currently not subscribing to redicecreations.com, do click on that subscribe or sign up button from our front page and read more about it. And I hope you consider signing up with us. It costs about 12 US cents a day, and you'll get full access to our archive. We do need your help so we can continue with this radio show and our website and expand and bring you even more good stuff. Thank you so much for listening, and thanks to producer Fredrik Palmgren behind the controls. We will be back this Thursday with author Paul Levy talking about his book The Madness of George W. Bush, A Reflection of Our Collective Psychosis. Good stuff coming up, so stay tuned to redicecreations.com. We will talk soon. This is Henrik Palmgren. Take care.